Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Eruvin Daf Pei Beis. Don't forget to click on the daf option in order to view a marked daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins the second line from the top of daf Pei Beis, but before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side under our nosei, our topic heading, where we see we've written Mahi Mashmos Hamilim Emosai Uvameh. What is the meaning of the words Emosai and Bameh Dekotoni B'divrei Rabbi Yehuda that you find in the context of Rabbi Yehuda? In other words, Rabbi Yehuda, who follows the statements of an earlier Tana, of the Tana Kama, he will at times say Emosai, or he'll say Bameh Dvor Mamurim. Is his intention to explain, or is it to disagree? The term Emosai would mean under what circumstances, or Bamed Vomamurim, likewise, when are the aforementioned things said? Is that a statement of explanation of the original statement, of the original, the earlier opinion, or a point of disagreement? We take a look now at the Gemara. Second line from the top, Gufa, Omar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Gufa represents a quote from something that had been mentioned earlier, and we had seen this at the end of our previous shiur. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says, Kol mokom she'omar Rabbi Yehuda emosai uvameh b'mishnoseinu, eino elo lefaresh divrei chachomim. According to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, when Rabbi Yehuda uses these terms, emosai or bameh, bameh dvor mamurim, in a mishnah, it is Rabbi Yehuda's intention to explain that which preceded him. For Rabbi Yochanan Amar, emosai lefaresh ubameh lachlok. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Rabbi Yochanan that is, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi disagree with regard to the use of the term Bameh or Bameh Dvar Mamurim by Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnayos. According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Levi, Bameh is an explanation, elucidation of that which preceded. And according to Rabbi Yochanan, the term Bameh is an expression of disagreement. The Gemara asks, the Emosai Lefareshu. It's interesting to know that as far as the use of the term Emosai, both according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, they agreed that Rabbi Yehuda's intention in the Mishnah, we should point out that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan are Amoroyim, and they're coming to explain how the Tana, Rabbi Yehuda, uses the term. So, is it really so, like they said, that Emosai is an explanation? And note that we have a long question over here. Has it not been taught in the following Tanaic source? Now, this Tanaic source has nothing to do with Dinim of Erevin, but what we're trying to focus on is how does Rabbi Yehuda use the term Emosai? The context of this quote is from Maseches Sanhedrin, which deals with those people that are unfit to serve as judges. Those are people that are involved with, and we see a few examples, people that are involved with gambling and other financially questionable forms of behavior. According to Rashi, we should just point out that this list are those that are posel to serve as witnesses. And they would also be posel to serve as judges. But we read, V'hotnan, V'elu hein hapsulin, the following are posel to serve as edim. Hamesachik b'kuvya, it's a person who plays a gambling type game, may be associated with dice. Malva beribis, people who loan with interest, which is forbidden in Jewish law. Umafriche yoinim, people that are involved with bird races. Vesochare shvius, people who do business with Shemitah products. Those are fruits and vegetables that grew during the Shemitah year, and they are forbidden to be bought and sold in commercial terms. So people who are engaged in these practices are unfit to serve as witnesses. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amosai, and here we have to take special note, here we've dashed underline Amosai, here Rabbi Yehuda is saying, when is this? Bizman she'ein lo umanus Elohi. His disqualification from serving as a witness is when he has no other umanus, no other craft or income other than these prohibited activities. Avol yeshlo umanus shelohi. If the person is gainfully employed through some other legitimate means, hare ze kosher. So this person, though he is engaged also in these questionable practices, he is still fit to serve as a witness. The toni alah bebraiso, and there is a comment made about this in a braiso. The chachomim oimrim. Now we're at this point. This chachomim is thought to be the Chachomim, or the Tanakama, that preceded Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachomim say, Bein she'ein lo umnus Elohi, ubein she'yesh lo umnus shelohi, hare ze posel. We've dashed underlined the expression she'yesh lo umnus shelohi, means he has another means of income, and yet the Chachomim, who we think are the Tanakama, the Deah that preceded Rabbi Yehuda, this opinion is saying, even if he has another legitimate means of income, he's unfit. Well, what did Rabbi Yehuda say about that? He said, if he has a legitimate alternative form of income, he is fit. So even though Rabbi Yehuda used the term Amosai, we see he is disagreeing with the opinion that preceded him. This is a problem then for both Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, that had said that when Rabbi Yehuda uses the term Amosai, he is simply coming to explain the preceding opinion. The Gemara answers, Hahi, the opinion in the Braisa that we thought was the Chachomim, the Tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda, it's not. It's a different opinion. It's not the Tanakama. It's not the Deya. It's not the opinion that preceded Rabbi Yehuda, who used the term Amosai. But it's a, we'll say it's an outside opinion. And it happens to be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Rabbi Tarfon. It's not Rabbi Yehuda per se that said Amosai before. This is a new opinion. The Sanya, Om Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Tarfon. Now, here we should point out, just by way of background, that this is a quote from a seemingly unrelated topic. However, once we extract the underlying principle, we then can tie the following topic of Nazirus into our issue of finances and qualification to serve as witness. So for the time being, realize that we're dealing with a seemingly unrelated issue. Now, Rabbi Yehuda, in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, describes a case where there are two people walking along, and there's someone in the distance that these two people notice. And these two people are about to accept upon themselves Nazirus under a given condition. So the story is as follows. You have these two people seeing someone coming in the distance. They're not in recognition's length right now. So they say, one says, I will be a Nazir if this is so-and-so. And the other friend says, I will be a Nazir if it's not so-and-so. Now, so when these two people are speaking, they're accepting upon themselves the Nazirus, but under unsure circumstances. They don't know at this point who the person is in the horizon. So it's an acceptance of Nazirus under condition, under a condition, which is not clear at the point in time that they are speaking. Let us say then it becomes clear, eventually it becomes clear who the person is. Is either one of them going to be a Nazir? So Rabbi Yehuda says, in the name of Rabbi Tarfon, Le'olam ein echod mehem Nazir. Neither of these people will be a Nazir, even though one of them is, in fact, the identity of the person becomes revealed. But so why is neither one of them a Nazir? Lefi she'ein Nazirus elo lehafla'a. Nazirite ship is accepted only under hafla'a circumstances. Hafla'a means clear speech. Speech that at the time it's uttered is done with clarity. Alma, we see from here, Kevon de Misafkale, e nozir, e lo nozir hu, lo mishabit mafshe. We see that the underlying psychology is such that since at the point that he is speaking, he is in doubt as to the identity of that person, so he does not obligate himself, in this case, obligate himself to Nazirite-ship. He doesn't obligate himself under doubtful circumstances. Now we extract this principle of how a person binds himself or obligates himself or acquiesces when dealing with questionable circumstances. Hochanami, so too, in our case, in the case having to do with departing from one's money. And that's what was the case in dealing with, let's say, gambling. Hochanami, kevan de lo yoda e koni e lo koni, since at the time the person is rolling the dice, he doesn't know whether he's going to win or not, or when he releases his bird, he doesn't know whether he is going to, his bird is going to be victorious in the race or not. Lo gomar umakne, he is not willing to part with his money. And in the event that, so, and when the circumstances do become clear, and one of the parties takes the money as the winning pot, he is taking money that the other person didn't want to part with. And as such, if you take the money, you're guilty of a form of thievery, hence making you, or hence disqualifying you from being a kosher witness. For our purposes, though, the point here is, as far as Rabbi Yehuda in Mishnayos using the term Amosai, and he's coming on the heels of a preceding opinion, so within that context, Rabbi Yehuda is not coming to argue, but rather he's coming to explain the Tana Kama. As far as the Braisa that we saw, quoting the Chachomim Omrim, that was not the Tana Kama, that was not the opinion that was that preceded Rabbi Yehuda when he used the term Amosai. At this point, we embark on the new perek, the eighth perek of Eruvin, the Mishnah. Ketzav mishtatfin betchumin. How does one prepare a tchum on behalf of other people, an Eruv tchumin? Of course, we've learned many, many times in the Masicht already in the past, the Eruv Tchumen is the setting down of a portion of food that extends a person's walking distance beyond the place of his Shvisa at the beginning of Shabbos. Generally speaking, if one doesn't prepare an Eruv Tchumen, he has the rights to walk 2,000 amos in all directions from the point that he had accepted Shabbos. And if he was in a city, so it's 2,000 amos in all directions of the city. By placing an Erev Tumen, so you extend your walking rights beyond 2,000 amos in one particular direction, thereby reducing that same amount in the opposite direction. So how is the food prepared when it is prepared on behalf of others? Meiniach es achovis, a person places down a barrel of food, v'omer hareze l'chol b'nei iri, l'chol mi sheyelech l'beis ha'ovel o l'beis ha'mishteh. This is, he declares that this is on behalf of all the other people of the city that are planning to go to a mourner's house or a festive house, a wedding house, that is more than 2,000 amos in a particular direction from their town. V'chol shekibel olav, anyone who accepted upon himself to rely upon this particular Eruv, miba'od yom mutter, if they accepted this on Friday, that the Eruv represents their new mokom shvisa, so mutter, they can go to that house that is there out there in the distance that's more than 2,000 amos in that particular direction. Misha techshach osur. However, if they accepted upon themselves the effectiveness of the Eruv after Shabbos already set in, it is not to be relied upon. Shein ma'arvin mishetechshach. One does not establish a Shabbos domain or Shabbos location after Shabbos has already set in. Omar Rav Yosef, Ein Ma'arvin Elo Ludvar Mitzvah. The extension of one's walking distance in a particular direction is allowed only if it's for the purposes of mitzvah fulfillment. The Gemara asks, "My Komash Malon, what does Rav Yosef inform me that I wouldn't have known already?" Tanino, our Mishnah tells us that very point. It said, "L'chomi shi'evich lebeis ha'ovel o lebeis ha'mishteh," that he's placing down the eruv for anyone who wants to go visit a mourner's house or a wedding house. Those are mitzvos. It's a mitzvah to comfort mourners, and it's a mitzvah to participate in the festivities following a wedding. So what does Rav Yosef say that the Mishnah doesn't already say, that the purpose of an eruv tchumen is for mitzvah fulfillment? The Gemara answers, "Mahu detema urchu de milsakotani." Without Rav Yosef, I would have thought that the Mishnah is citing simple, regular examples of why people might want to extend their boundary in a particular direction. However, if a person wanted to extend his walking distance for personal reasons that were non-mitzvah related, that would also be okay. Komash Malon, Rav Yosef says, no, that's not okay. It's restricted. The rights of the distance extension is restricted to performance of mitzvah out there in that extended area. The Gemara now deals with a question that we've touched upon in the past and is found and featured in many different masichtas, and it's the issue of Brera, that's retroactive determination. So our Mishnah said, V'chol shekibo olov mi ba'od yom, if a person accepted upon himself the Eruv Tchumen, this distance extender, on Friday, so then it's effective. If he had accepted it upon himself on Shabbos, so then it would not be effective. In other words, we can't say that the fact that he decided on Shabbos that he wants it to be a good Eruv retroactively shows us that that's really what he wanted from Eruv Shabbos. We don't allow that. You have to have a formal acceptance on Friday. But this idea of accepting on Shabbos and then saying retroactively this was his desired mokum shvisa on Friday, we don't accept. So Shamis Minol, should we conclude from here, Ein Brera, that we don't accept retroactive definition as legitimate, to Iyesh Brera, if retroactive clarification would be acceptable, Tigli Milsa Lamafreya, let it be revealed retroactively, Dibimaod Yom Hava Nichole, that really from Friday this is what his desire was. He's simply telling us now on Shabbos what he accepts it, and that should serve as simply a statement that helps clarify retroactively what he really wanted. So at this point, it seems that we don't accept that. Hence, Ein Brera, this concept of retroactive clarification, is unacceptable. The Gemara says, no, let's not conclude that. Omer of Ashi, the circumstances of the Mishnah are rather hodiuhu. They informed him of a base ovel on Friday, the loho diu, or alternatively, they did not inform him on Friday, they informed him only on Shabbos proper, kotoni. That's what the Mishnah was talking about. Therefore, if he was informed of a base ovel on Friday, fine and good, so he could, in fact, if he was aware that there was a base ovel, so then there is a possibility, according to this approach in the Gemara, that even if he accepts the Eruv on Shabbos, it would be okay, because there's a point in time that we can refer back to retroactively. However, if he wasn't informed that there was a base ovel out there at a distance of more than 2,000 amos, he wasn't informed of that, on Friday. He was first informed about it on Shabbos. So we can't, there's no room for any retroactive clarification, because we can't say, well, retroactively that's where he wanted to be on Friday, when he didn't even know about the existence of that place, of that Beis Ovel or Beis HaMishneh. He didn't know about it until Shabbos proper. Omar Rav Asi. And now we have a new topic, and on the side of our Gemara we've noted the Nosei, Ad Eze Gil Yeled Katan Kalu Be'eruv Imo. Until what age is a little child, is an infant or a toddler, considered part of the Eruv set down by his mother? In other words, that she would be able to walk with the child more than 2,000 Amos. But simply by virtue of the fact that this is her child, and the child is associated with the mother in an integral form. And this will become clear as we go on in the Gemara. Omer of Asi, Koton ben Sheish, Yotze Be'eruv Imo. A six-year-old child is entitled to go with his mother. Had she made an Eruv in a particular direction, the child is, as Rashi says, kegufa domi. The child is considered like a part of her, that when she set down the Eruv, it's most likely she had in mind the child as well. And that this is the age that the child, that up till this age, the child would not be able to exist, to continue without his mother. If we look in Rashi, Yotzei Be'eruvimo, Irvo Imo Le'atzmo, if a woman, a mother prepared an Eruv for herself, Lo Zichsalo Be'eruv, and she didn't specify that this is also for her child, Melichosoi Imo, she nevertheless can have the child go with her, De Kegufa Domi. It's like a part of her body. De Mistamo Daito Aleo, that in all likelihood, her mind is on the child. De lo sagi le balav imo. The child would not be able to continue without his mother. So Rav Asi establishes that age being 6 years old. As we go on in the Gemara, we have some structural notes to deal with. First of all, there's a long question that appears. And on the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh, the triangle that you see introduces Shnei Kushios Al Shitas Rav Asi. So you'll note the number 1 over here. And on Omid Beis, you'll notice 6 lines from the top, another attempted question on Rav Asi. So the question begins, again, noting it's a long question. Meisvei, Koton Shetzorech Li'imo Yotzei Be'eruv Imo. A child that is dependent on his mother goes together with her based on her Eruv, and a child that's Ein Tzorech Limo does not go automatically based on the fact that she made a personal Eruv Tchumen. Utnan Nami Gabi Sukkah Ki Aigavna. We have a similar halacha with regard to the mitzvah of Sukkah. Koton She'ein Tzorech Limo Chayev B'Sukkah. A child that does not need his mother anymore is obligated rabbinically to be educated in fulfilling the mitzvah of sukkah. V'havino bo, ezuk v'ezuk koton she'ein tzorech limo. This is a catchphrase, ein tzorech limo, because we're applying it to sukkah and we're going to apply it to the Eruv Tchum issue, our topic. So the question is raised, so what is considered a koton that doesn't need his mother? Amri debei Rabbi Yanai, kol shenifne v'ein imo mekanchoso. A child that has reached the age that he can relieve himself and does not need his mother to clean him, to wipe him clean. Shimon ben Lokish Omar, and there's a bracketed session that we'll skip initially, kol sheneir mishinoso, a child that's at that age, and when he wakes up from sleep, the eno kore imo imo, and he doesn't call out in rapid succession, mommy, mommy. V'kamo, and how old is this? Kibar, arba kibar chomesh, 4 or 5 years old. That 4 or 5 years old is called Ein Tzorech Limo. Well, what did Rav Asi say? Rav Asi says that up till 6, he is considered tzorach li'imo. He needs his mommy. If you want, if you're asking about what's this seeming hesitancy, 4 or 5, so Rashi addresses this at the bottom, kabar arba kabar chomesh kori le ein tzorach li'imo kol chad lefum churfa, each according to his level of sharpness or maturity. Almo mechihavi bar chomesh boi lizchuye. You see from here that once the kid reaches 5 years old, he would need to have he would need to be specified. As opposed to automatic, he would need to be specified in the making of an eruv. Utfei mi bar chomesh lo kori le tzorach li'imo de lepok. More than 5, he would not be considered dependent on his mother. That would thereby entitle him to be included automatically in his mother's eruv. So this is a question on Rav Asi. Rav Asi said, up till 6. A 6-year-old is considered tzorach limo, and according to this, what we've just seen in the long question, that once he's reached 5, he's ein tzorach limo. We now continue at the top of Omid Beis. Omar Rabbi Yeshua Braid Rav Idi, Ki Omar Rav Asi. The Rav Asi's point that he's yotze be'eruv imo at 6 years old is under the following circumstance. Kagon she'irev olav oviv litzafon v'imo l'dorom. It's a case where the child, he has two parents. He's got his mother and his father. And the parents specified the child in their eruv. And we're not dealing with a case of an automatic inclusion, but rather a specification. The problem here is that the mother made her eruv in one direction, in the south. That would mean that if she made the eruv a full 2,000 amas southwards, then there is no moving north whatsoever. And the father had made an eruv northwards, thereby restricting southward movement. Under circumstances like that, the Rav Asi teaches the Afilu Bar Sheish Nami Betzafsa Deime Nicha Le, that even a 6-year-old, even though he's relatively mature as far as children are concerned, he nevertheless wants to be in the company, Tzafsa, in the company of his mother. Meisvei, the Gemara raises a question, and we should note here on the side, we have a comment, He'ora b'mivneh, a structural comment. You see a double underline that will appear shortly in the Gemara. Mimokor zeh, from this source that we're about to learn, ha-Gemara takshe gimel kushios al ha-moroyim d'le'el. The Gemara will raise 3 questions on the amoroyim that we have learned till now. The aleph, the first one, is a tiufta, is a repudiation, a rejection of something that had been said. Beis and Gimel, that we will see in the Gemara, are nisyonos. They are attempts, besignon lema, using the style of a suggested repudiation. So the Gemara now raises a question, and we'll see who the question is on. Meisvei koton shitzorach li'imo, yoytse be'eruv imoi, ad ben sheish. A child who is tzorach li'imo, who needs his mother, will be included in the mother's eruv until 6 years of age. Tiufta de Rabbi Yeshua bar Idi. This is a repudiation of Rabbi Yeshua bar Idi. You see, according to Rabbi Yeshua bar Idi, he is not considered tzorach li'imo up till age 6. He's considered tzorach li'imo, according to Rabbi Yeshua bar Idi, only till, let's say, 5. The idea of an older child, he said, was based on other circumstances. Here we see that he's considered tzorach li'imo even older than 5. He says, ad ben sheish. Now let's take a look at the Rashi. 3 lines from the top. Meisvei, ad ben sheish, hon leko lemeimar b'sh'or avalov Zelikan v'zelikan. You can't say that this source is referring to the case that Rabbi Yeshua Bar-Eder of Edi featured. To ad kotoni, the source said that he is considered Tzorach Limo until age 6. Demashma ben Shona uben Shtayim v'Shalosh ad ben Sheish Yotze Be'erivimo, that he automatically goes with his mother. V'chi hechi de ben Shona uben Shtayim, just like a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old is considered automatically with his mother below Zikui Eruv. Komar ben Dalin ben Chomesh Nami beloi Irvu Olov Komar, even a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old without a specific Eruv being made for them, he's automatically considered with his mother. The chinami amrinon ad v'lo ad b'chal, even if you reduce the age to say up till and not including, haviot yufto de Rabbi Yeshua, this will still be a repudiation of Yeshua b'Eder of Edi, de toretz de ben hey tzorech linskois loi. He said that a child who's reached 5 years of age, the mother has to specify him, otherwise he won't be included. So at this point, we see a repudiation of Rabbi Yeshua b'Eder of Edi. Tiufta. So this is conclusive. Just to repeat the point again, according to Rabbi Yeshua b'Eder of Edi, a child who has reached the age of 5 is not included automatically, and according to this source, a child who is 5 years old is still included automatically in his mother's Eruv. The Gemara asks, Lema tevi tufte de Rav Asi? Should we say that this source is a repudiation of Rav Asi? Well, Rav Asi we saw at the opening of this sugya. He was the one that said that a koton ben sheish yotze be'eruv imo. So this source that says until 6, he's yotze be'eruv imo, which might mean that up till but not including a 6-year-old means up till when he's finished his 5th year of life, that's it. He's no longer Tzorach Limo. But according to Rav Asi, even during his entire 6th year, he is still considered Tzorach Limo. So should we say that this source is a repudiation of Rav Asi? Omar loch Rav Asi. Rav Asi will tell you, no, it's not against me. Ad, the source that uses the term Ad Ben Sheish V'Ad Bechlal, it's up till and including 6 years, meaning until he's completed 6 full years of life, until he starts into his 7th year, he is considered still Tzorach Limo. So this source is in conjunction, or is it confirms Rabbi Asi's approach. Lema teve tufte de Rabbianai v'Reish Lakish. Should we say that this source repudiates those opinions? And let's not forget, they appeared at the bottom of Omen Aleph. They indicated that a cotton is ein tzorach li'imo even at age 4 or 5. Now, this source says that he, at up till that age, it is considered tzorach li'imo. So, is this not a problem for them? Lo kashya. No, it's not a problem for them. Ha de ise avui b'masa, ha de loy ise avui b'masa. It all depends if his father is in town or not. If his father is not in town, so he's considered tzorach li'imo until 6. But if his father is in town, so then he is not considered tzorach li'imo in our context. Let's take a look at the Rashi. Dibur Hamasu, ha di ise lavua b'masa. Vahatinok nichnas v'yotzi imo. If his father is in town and the child accompanies his father, lo kori le tzorach limo mi ben dalid ulamalo. He's not considered dependent on his mother from age 4 and up. Ubraisa, the source that we saw on this Omid of Gemara, 5 lines from the top, that said, Ad ben sheish, b'delesavua b'masa. The child's father is not in town. Rashi goes on to explain how Rabbi Yeshua, b'Eder of Edi, could not answer this way, the way that we are answering for Rav Yanai and Reish Lakish. Let us turn back to the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan Me'ariv Adam Al Yidei Bino Uvito Aktanim. Al Yidei means, you know, for Bishvil. A person can make an error for his son, his daughter that are minors. Al Yidei Avdom Shivchasu Aknanim, for his male servants and female bondmaids that are non-Jewish, bain ledaiton, bain shelo ledaiton, whether they are aware of this or even unaware. Avol eino ma'arev lo ayudei avdov shivchosu ifriim. A person cannot prepare an eruv for his Jewish servants. Velo al yidei bino ubito hagdolim, nor for his son or daughter that are adults, that are above bar mitzvah and bas mitzvah. Velo al yidei ishto elo midaitim, nor for his wife, unless they are aware. Tanyo idoch. We have another Tanaic source. Lo ya'arev odom al yidei bino ubito hagdolim. Velo al yidei avdo v'shivchosu ivrim, velo al yidei ishto elo midaiton. Other, you cannot make for them, just as we learned in the previous source, unless they are in approval. Avol me'arev hu al yidei avdo v'shivchosu aknanim, v'al yidei beno uvito haktanim, bein ledaiton uvein shelo ledaiton. Just like we saw before, you can make for them, whether it's with their approval or their knowledge or even without. Because they are like an extension of him. And all of them that made their own Eruv and their master made an Eruv in a different direction, we say Yoitzin Bishel Rabon, they follow their master's Eruv Chutz Min Ho'isha, with the exception of the individual's wife, because she can protest. In other words, she has her own mindset, her own identity. The Gemara asks, Isha Maishna, what's the difference between the wife as opposed to the Eved Ivri and the Bonav Hakadolim? Omar Rabo, Isha V'chol the Dami Law. In fact, there is no difference. This source that said, Chutz min ha'isha meant with the exception of the woman, the wife, and all those that are like her, the Jewish servants and his children that are adult. Omar Mar, we now quote from that which we saw just before. Chutz min ha'isha b'nei shi'acholo limchos. We said that a man who made an Eruv in one direction and the wife that made an Eruv in another direction, so she goes with her own. She doesn't follow her husband's Eruv because she can protest. Taimo demochi. So, according to the source, it's because she protests. Ha stamo nafko b'debayla. If she would remain silent and didn't protest his making the Eruv in the other direction, so she would go with her husband. Well, Hakotoni Reisha, but did it not say in the Reisha, Elo Midaitam, that you need to have their approval? My love, the Amri in. When you say Midaitam, does that not mean that she has to say, yes, I want to be with you? Now, we've dashed underlined the Amri in, meaning that when is the woman included with her husband? If you assume that Elamidaita means positive expression of approval, so only then would she be following her husband's Eruv. But just the line before, we inferred that when is she not included? When she protests that which her husband did. However, if she remains silent, she is included. So that is our question right now. Is silence enough to be included in the husband's Eruv, or does there have to be a positive expression of approval to be included? So the Gemara says, lo, the Elomidaitam doesn't mean that she has to positively accept. My Elomidaitam, what does that mean? The Ishtiku, where she remains silent. In other words, the husband made an Eruv in one direction, and she made an Eruv in another direction. She didn't protest what her husband did. She's included in her husband's Eruv. Let's read that again. My, so we say, my elomidaitam dishtinku lafuke hecho di amri lo, to the exclusion of the case where she actually protests. So at this point, we have seemingly resolved what we thought was a contradiction. At this point, we're saying that the only time she's not included is where there's a formal protest. The Gemara asks, Ha v'kulon she'iruvu v'irev alehen rabon, yoitzin b'shel rabon, destamohu. We have, it was taught above, that if they made an Erev in one direction, and the husband or the boss makes an Erev in another direction, they go with the Rabbon, they go with the master. That's a case of destamahu. There's silence there. They made it in one direction, made it in another, and it says they're included in with the master. It's a case of stamo. Vikotoni, and it says in this context, it's said in the source above, chutz min ho'isha delo nafki. So here we have a case of stamo, and it says about the woman that she's not included. And yet we just got finished saying that the only time the woman is not included is when she makes a formal protest. The Gemara answers, Omar Rava, Kevon She'irvu. When you have a case of those people, the wife or the adult, the children, or the Evan the Shifcha Kenani making an Eruv in an opposite direction, that is the ultimate protest. That's not a case of stama. So that at this point in the Gemara, which is, we've concluded the discussion, if there is any form of protest that can be verbal or the making of an Eruv in an opposite direction, so the wife and those that are like her are not included. If the man, the husband or the boss makes an Eruv in a particular direction and they didn't make their own alternative Eruv and they remained silent, so they are included in the husband's Eruv. The Mishnah, the Kamo Hu Shi'uro. Here we discuss the issue of the mozon, the shi'ur mozon, the amount of food needed for an Eruv. The Mishnah answers how much, what is the shi'ur, what is the quantity? Answer, mozon shtei su'udos l'chol echod ve'echod. The amount that constitutes two meals worth of food for each person, mezona l'chol v'lo l'shabbos, divrei Rabbi Meir. Two meals, weekday meals, not Shabbos meals. Rabbi Yehuda Omer l'shabbos v'lo l'chol, two Shabbos meals and not weekday meals. V'zeh v'zeh miskavnin l'hokil. Both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are striving to present a lenient approach, so that when Rabbi Meir says L'chol, he's implying that a weekday meal is smaller than a Shabbos meal. And when Rabbi Yehuda says Shabbos meals, he's implying that that two Shabbos meals would be less in quantity than two weekday meals. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Oimer, Mikikor bepunyon midalit soyin besela. A loaf that you could purchase with a punyon coin. A punyon coin is 1/48 of a sela coin. These are two coin types, a punyon and a sela. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka says that two meals worth of food is the size of a loaf that you would buy with a punyon coin when four sa'ah of flour cost a sela. So we're dealing with an amount of food that would basically be 1/48 of a sela. And as far as quantity is concerned, it's the amount of food that you would buy with 1/48 of a sela, which in effect would be 1/12 of a sa'ah. Because in this discussion we're saying that given that four sa' cost a sela, that's four sa' is a sela, and a sela is 48 punyon, so one sa' would be a quarter of that, namely 12. So the size of the Shnei Seudos, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, is 1/12 of a saw. That is a physical amount, a size, physical quantity. 1/12 of a saw. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shtei Yodos L'Kikor Misholosh L'Kav. Rabbi Shimon says that two meals is the amount found in 2/3 of a loaf, when 3 loaves could be prepared from a kav. Kav is a measure. Chetzya lebeis hamenuga, half of that loaf would be of relevance to the amount of time one would tarry, would delay, the amount of time needed to eat half of that loaf in order to absorb tumas negoyim as a result of entering a house that's afflicted with tzoras. V'chetzya, half of that, which would be a quarter of the original, would be lifsol es hagvia, to render someone unfit, in tuma terms, having eaten oichlin tumeim. Gvia is a body, one's own body. So it's a quarter of the loaf that was mentioned, eating a quarter of that quantity, if it were oichlin tumeim, would render a person tome. This, of course, is a rabbinic law. Food does not make, on a Torah level, does not make a person tome, but midin rabbanan, it does. And how much food? It would be a quarter of the loaf that was mentioned for the shiur of an eruv tumen. The Gemara. And here we focus on what is the shiur of mazon shtei seudos. The kama mazon shtei seudos, according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, what is that amount? Because we already saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon giving their physical quantities. We didn't see Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda giving physical quantities. We saw them simply describing them as either a weekday meal or a Shabbos meal. Well, how much is that? Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Rav, Tarti Rifta Ikraisa. 2 Rifta are loaves, Ikraisa, 2 Ikraisa literally are farmer's loaves. Rashi describes these as farmers go out to their fields to plow their fields with oxen. They carry these size loaves with them, so it's a known quantity as far as the Gemara is concerned. Rav Adobar Ava Omar Tarti Rifta Nahar Papisa. 2 Nahar Papisa is a location, a place. So it's 2 loaves that were found in that location. They apparently had a standard loaf size. 2 of them constitutes Mozon Shtei Seudos. Omer Le Rav Yosef, the Rav Yosef Brei de Rabba. Rav Yosef turns to another person named Rav Yosef, but it's a different individual, obviously. He's the son of Rabba. And Rav Yosef asks, Avuch Keman Svirole, your father, meaning Rabba, who does he hold like? Answer, Kribi Meir Svirole. He holds, like Rabbi Meir, that it's 2 weekday meals worth, which would be less than 2 Shabbos meals. That's what the son of Rabba answered. Now Rav Yosef, who asked the question, he says, Ano nami k'Rabbi Meir Svirali, I also hold like Rabbi Meir, d'i k'Rabbi Yehuda, because if I were to hold like Rabbi Yehuda that claimed a Shabbos meal is less in quantity. Now, we didn't explain earlier why would Rabbi Yehuda say that. So the explanation is that since a person on Shabbos eats 3 meals as opposed to standard practice of eating 2 meals, so since Shabbos, during Shabbos, one would eat 3 meals, each meal is going to be less in size. So Rav Yosef comments, I have difficulty accepting that. Ha kashya ha de amri inshi. The following common wisdom or common saying would pose a problem for the opinion of the Tana Rebbe Yehuda. What's the common saying? Revocho lebesimo shechiach. There's always room for something pleasant. In other words, if on Shabbos, which was Shabbos was characterized by good food. There's always room for, as we say in English, there's always room for dessert. There's always room for more. So that the fact that over the course of Shabbos, a person eats three meals, that isn't going to reduce the amount per meal per se. So that to suggest that the Shabbos meal was less in size than a weekday meal is hard to accept. That's what Rav Yosef is saying here. Therefore, if you want to compare meal size one to the other, it's most likely that a weekday meal is lesser in size than a Shabbos meal. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka Omer. We saw in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka telling us that a shiur, the quantity of shtei sudos, in effect is 1/12 of a sa'ah. Just by way of quantities, it should be noted that a sa'ah contains 6 kav. Being that a sa'ah contains 6 kav, 1/12 of a saw would be 1/2 a kav. That having been said, mazon shtei sudos is then 1/2 of a kav. The Gemara continues after citing Rabbi Yochanan and Brokos, Shita Tana Ukroivim Divrayim Liyos Shavin. The opinions of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon in the Mishnah are very close to one another in quantity. The Gemara asks, "Mi domi? Are they really so close in quantity?" Let us focus on not a half a kav, but a full kav, one kav. How many meals would be in one kav? So if 2 meals, according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, is contained in 1/2 a kav, so a full kav would have 4 meals in it. So the Gemara says, "Mi domi, how can you say that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is close in size to Rabbi Shimon? De Rabbi Yochanan arba su'udasa lekava. According to him, there are 4 meals in one kav, and de Rabbi Shimon teisha su'udasa lekava. According to Rabbi Shimon, in fact, you would have 9 meals in one kav." Let's go back to seeing what was Rabbi Shimon's shita. Rabbi Shimon said in the Mishnah that 2 meals is, in effect, 2/3 of one loaf. What's the size of that one loaf? The one loaf is 1/3 of a kav. So it's 2/3 of 1/3 of a kav. Well, what's 2/3 of 1/3? 1/3, if you divide it into 3 parts, are 3/9. So 2/3 of 1/3 are 2/9 of a kav. 2/9 is 2 meals. 1/9 of a kav is 1 meal. So how many meals are in a full kav? If 1/9 of a kav is 1 meal, a kav has 9 times that. So there will be 9 meals worth of food in one kav. So that's what the Gemara points out. After Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka tells me that in one kav there are 4 meals, Rabbi Shimon tells me there are 9 meals in one kav. How can this Tanaic source therefore say that they are close to one another? There's a very big gap between 4 meals versus 9 meals in one kav. Omar Rav Chisda. Now, Rav Chisda comes to answer. However, we should note structurally, the double underline features 2 versions of Rav Chisda. Later in the Gemara, the question will come out, how do you resolve 2 versions of Rav Chisda? But Rav Chisda says that the shiur in the Mishnah of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who said that there are 4 meals in a kav, that really is an amount after the vendor took off his profit. Omar Rav Chisda, say mehen shlish lechenvoni. That means take off a third for the store owner or the person who sold you the food. So that when I, let us say, I take a punyon, that was the coin, and I buy, I buy a half a kav. So we saw that a half a kav, or let's more accurately say that a full kav had four meals in it. So when I buy that, it's an amount left after the chenvoni took off his profit. So if he took off a third, how much, and I'm left with four meals, how many meals worth were there before profit was deducted? There were six meals. Okay, so then Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's opinion about how many meals are in a kav, not four, but rather six. Va'akati, but still, lamor tisha, lamor shis. According to Rabbi Shimon, there were nine meals worth of food in a kav, and according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, there are only six. How can the source say that they are close to one another? There's still a big gap between six meals worth versus nine meals worth in a kav. Hello. Ki'idach, the Rav Chisda. The understanding of the Braisa that says that Krovim Devarim Liyoshavin is like another teaching of Rav Chisda, Yomar, Tzei Mehen Mechtsa Lechenvoni. That the number of what we said before, four meals that you will find in a kav, that's after profit after 50% profit was deducted. Well, if four represents 50% of an original number, how many meals really were there in a kav? There were eight meals worth of food in a kav. Ve'akati, but still, lamor teisha ulamor tani. According to Reb Shimon, there are nine meals worth of food in a kav of grain. And according to Reb Yochanan ben Broka, there are only eight meals worth. The Gemara says, well, that's no problem. Hainu deko omar. That is what the source taught. Ukroivim divreim liyoshavim. That the opinions of Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Shimon are actually close to one another. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka saying there are eight meals worth of food in a kav. That means that if you were to take your own, you harvested your own field and you produced a kav of grain, and you don't have to pay anyone because it's all home produced, you will find eight meals worth of food in a kav. According to Rabbi Shimon, you'll find nine meals worth in a kav, but those are numbers that are close to one another. The Gemara now asks, Kashya de Rav Chisda de Rav Chisda. Is there not a contradiction within Rav Chisda himself? How much profit do merchants take off from that which you are buying from them? Do they take off a third or a half? Lo kashya, there's no contradiction here. Ha de ko yoyiv baal habayis tzivi, ha de lo ko yoyiv baal habayis tzivi. Let's just preface that we're dealing with the person you're buying the food from is a person who he is the manufacturer. So if you, the customer, provide the wood needed serving as fuel for the baking of these loaves, so the chenvoni will then take only a third off as his profit. However, if you don't provide the fuel, so then the chenvoni has to compensate for that, and he'll take off half as profit. Before we conclude, let us remind you that you can be in touch with us at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.